Welcome to Authenticate This, the cybersecurity leadership podcast for CISOs and identity leaders navigating the complex world of identity. From real-life breaches to internal missteps and everything in between, we bring you authentic stories, hard-earned lessons, and actionable insights to help you lead with confidence when chaos strikes. Our goal is to humanize identity, uncover actionable solutions, and explore the business of identity beyond the spreadsheet. This is Authenticate This, where identity meets leadership.
Hey, welcome to Authenticate This. I'm Aaron Lentz. Got our other host, Tim York, on the call. Today, we got a special guest, Rich Rhodes. Rich, you just started at Choice Bank as a new CISO. Very excited for that new role for you. Man, in our quick little intro call, I got to learn a lot about you, and you do a ton. It's not surprising that you got to be a CISO. There's a CISO who does a lot of different things in a role. And just seeing you in your own life and your life history, you do things like manage rugby teams. You've got different charity events. You're very vocal and active in various cyber groups in your area in the Twin Cities. So it's great to have you on here. Man, maybe give yourself a second to introduce yourself to our audience and we'll dive in.
Yeah. So Rich Rhodes, I'm the new CISO at Choice Bank, out of Fargo area originally. Been in the role about 2 months. I've been doing security for over 12 years in a dedicated fashion, done identity and access management a lot. I've run security programs before, been in banking and financial primarily in my security functions, but have worked in a number of other verticals. Father of three, grandfather of three, two dogs, wife. So I've got it all going on.
That's true. You do have it all going on. We'll dig into a lot of it, Rich. But as Aaron said, we were prepping for this call. You came to us through one of our very own employees, Mercy, from a longstanding relationship. And this podcast is about the human side of identity. And so when we went to our team and said, we're looking for guests to come on the podcast that have a focus on the human side, and your name was at the top of the list based on a lot of the things that you've done in the past, a lot of things that you're currently doing. So I'm really excited to dig in. But before we start with some of these questions, it's kind of been a tradition lately on this podcast is we go to Not the Onion on Reddit. And my favorite thing is to drill down in the Not the Onion articles, identity or hack or security specific, just the last couple of days, just to see kind of what's happening. And I'd love to talk about a couple of these articles. So for those of you not familiar with Not the Onion, if you're familiar with the Onion, it's a website that has fake articles that sound like they could be real, but they're usually over the top. And Not the Onion are real articles that seem like they should be fake, but they're actually real. So the first one, here's a kind of a sad one, really. There was a man locked up in a Hawaii mental hospital for 2 years because of a case of mistaken identity. And so what had happened, this man's name is Joshua Spreisterbach. So Joshua Spreisterbach happened to be homeless, living in Hawaii in 2018, and he fell asleep on a chair in a park and was arrested. And when he got arrested, he thought he was being arrested for sleeping in public or something. And when they take him in, he says, my name is Joshua Spreisterbach. And they said, no, your name is, they gave him another name. They thought he was somebody else. They didn't check for fingerprints. They didn't check for pictures or anything. And they booked him. And because Joshua was homeless, he very likely probably was suffering from some type of mental health disorder, maybe very common in the homeless community. And so they put him in that box and they said, you're this guy. And they kept treating him and giving him medication and saying, no, you're delusional. And he's like, no, my name is Joshua. I am not this guy. And so this was a police department that processed this gentleman. And finally, there was a worker within one of the hospitals that said, maybe Joshua's actually telling the truth. She looked up some pictures of the other name and realized that for 2 years, this just gentleman was in prison. I mean, again, Not the Onion, kind of crazy. This is Hawaii. This is one of our 50 states in North America. Like, how crazy is this?
Yeah, so it's interesting. My wife and I decided before COVID, about 4 years before COVID, to start up just a little ministry here at home. Because I used to work downtown St. Paul, used to take the bus, and used to take the bus past the homeless shelter. And we would see the people outside the homeless shelter and in the parks. And I just felt led that we got to go do something. So we started making sandwiches, small bags, and we'd go down there. And I can't tell you in that community, like you said, mental health, addiction, lots of reasons But losing their identity, the paper copies, the physical pieces, was a common thing. They'd have it in the backpack. They're on a bench, someone steals a backpack. They're in the homeless shelter, in their cot, someone comes by and snags it out from under the bed while they're sleeping. All sorts of things happen. And these people then are just stuck. How do I get state benefits? How do I get federal benefits? How do I even begin to get a job, right? I have no way to validate who I am. And so it's an interesting topic considering our focus today of identity verification. How do I validate who I am? It's interesting how real that can be for people.
Yeah.
Also goes to show you really don't compare a lot of what we do in an enterprise to those who are unhoused, but it's certainly a part of it where you think about that there are different varying aspects of what it takes to have an identity and what it takes to move through an organization at different levels, and then what those independent people have to do in their daily lives to support it. So we have lots of our customers who do manufacturing, and they're like, from a secure perspective, we got to do MFA, we got to have this and we got to have that. Well, a lot of folks who work in manufacturing don't have mobile phones, which seems surprising to those who do. But by and large, a large population is unable to do MFA from a security perspective, much less have things like in this story where you don't actually have physical IDs to support who you are. Can you tell me a little bit about Meals on Wheels? Is that what this was in reference to?
No, it's one of the reasons why I joined Metro Meals on Wheels is because, again, we had this ministry that we were just doing as a family. I think we got up to about 200 meals twice every other week, or bags that we're handing out. Then COVID hit, and many of them were getting moved into hotels and other things, right? The government had kind of stepped in and were spreading around. We couldn't serve in that way, so I decided to join the board at Metro Meals on Wheels here in Minneapolis.
I know this is not an identity topic, but that had to be very enlightening for you just as a person and for your family.
It was. And then you get over to the Metro Meals on Wheels, which generally supports more the older population and people who struggle to get out, get groceries, or let alone make their own meals. And so it's a different side of the population, but see the greater need right across our area.
You clearly learned a lot about people in that, because I mean, you're talking to folks and seeing different, a whole different kind of walk of life for you. And then you're also a CISO who has like enormous responsibilities working with lots of other folks. Were you able to learn things and just how to work with people in different areas of like their own walks and stuff and translate that into CISO? And just what Tim talks a lot about, we talk about a lot of this podcast, is that humanizing identity piece, yeah. Humanizing the people around it. How much has that translated?
Security as a whole is people in process, I think more so identity at times. And then, yeah, I think all of that experience has helped me in my role. It's an interesting thing when you hand someone a bag with some food, or you open up the back of your truck and you've got dozens of packages of underwear and you got to go, all right, sir, what size underwear do you take, right? Or socks, like, are you regular or are you big-footed, right? And just to be able to have some of those conversations that stare another person in the face, another human in the face, and have that loving conversation. And one of the things that stood out was, we are going to show respect to these people because they don't even show respect to each other most often when you watch their interactions amongst themselves. We're going to do the thing that no one else does, let alone they themselves. So I think it has just taught me that, again, around the people in process, that not everybody's at the same place. Everybody's got something going on, and you have to bring a gentler form to our practice, right? The human element to the practice.
I can imagine the perspective that I could give you talking in the enterprise level. I mean, one, you're like, guys, like, you're going to go home tonight and eat. Like, you're going to go home to your family. You got heating and air conditioning. You probably have extra bedrooms. Like, it's a very different life perspective. But regardless, you're still going to talk to these people. And I'm sure you still have that fighting between HR and infrastructure teams or your business units, like, that you're probably often having to deal with some amount of conflict resolution for.
Sometimes I think the big thing is, let's not be the source of the conflict. Let's find a way to solve problems together. And also, let's not create artificial timelines or artificial problems that don't really exist, right? And because there's a problem, should it be fixed? Yes, it doesn't have to get fixed now. Let's talk through it. Let's find a solution that works for all of us. Particularly in my new role, there's problems at every business. There's things that need improved in every business. I'm coming in not trying to be the superhero with a cape and solve it all. I'm trying to come in and yes, I want to see it solved, but let's do it in a way that makes sense for everybody.
Good.
Because the people side of it, yes, people are going to go home, but we don't know what's going on with that person in finance or that person in risk or that person in IT. We have no idea what's going on in their life, right? And my biggest problem may be 10th on their list today because they could have a family member. They could have a friend. They could have something with a health issue or something going on. And today might not be the day where I get to be number one.
That's extremely kind of you, Rich. I don't know the majority of people act that way in their business. And I know I've certainly been guilty of doing the opposite, trying to do better, but that's got to be a tough thing to sort of make sure you drive by every day.
You try to, for sure, right? And it's like everything. We want to be secure. Some days we're not as secure as we'd like to be, right? Going to the next day and try to be better.
I was going to dig in. So you mentioned the ministry. We talked about Meals on Wheels. There's a few other things that you're doing within the community outside of your CISO role. But I actually want to talk to the root of this, right? So I get a sense that you have a lot of values and that's kind of how you lead your life based on our early interviews. And you mentioned a story. We didn't dig in too much yesterday, but I'm kind of curious. Your football team, you were a college athlete and there was a moment with your football team where you stopped a crime. And it feels like this was kind of a pivotal moment in your life. You want to tell that story?
Yeah, so it was my sophomore year of two-a-days in the middle of August, and we were off having lunch, and about a dozen of us or so went down to a local Godfather's in St. Paul. They used to do the all-you-can-eat buffet, and for college football guys, that was perfect.
The only day they lost money at the all-you-can-eat buffet.
Oh, yes. We had a city of crust built across the table.
Yeah.
High rises and everything. Anyway, we saw a guy come running in and talk to the people at the registers, and then he went running out. And then the people behind the registers ran out and were like, what is going on? So we had finished eating. A bunch of us stepped outside and didn't see anybody. And next thing you know, two guys kind of come strolling around the corner of the building, kind of towards us. And we're like, all right. And then all of a sudden the managers pulled up behind them, turned the corner, stopped those guys. And they took off. I tripped one and he face planted into a pillar. And then a bunch of us started chasing them down neighborhoods in St. Paul. We caught them about six blocks later, belly chicken winged and on their belly. St. Paul police hooked them and took them. And it was kind of funny. We told the coaches when we got back, they were a little concerned. What is my team getting into? But then a couple of months later, this hit the news wires and was in NCAA news. And we ended up getting presidential letters from George Bush Jr.
Yeah, I mean, that feels like pivotal, right? You were in the right place at the right time. We're able to stop a bad actor. And do you think that's kind of led into some of your desires to stop bad actors here?
I think at the end of the day, all of this kind of stems down to one thing. Like, I do security because it aligns with what I believe, good versus evil. And in all this, I want to be good. I want to stop evil. That day, I could have did what most people would have did, is backed up, let them through, and moved on with my day. But I didn't. And now I've got a career where I'm doing more of the same every day. And also I'll say that part of it, too, is helping. And I've now looked back in my life, and I've got a history of that, too. And like I think you said, right, it's part of my upbringing, part of who I am. And isn't going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah. So at IC Consult, I run the channel programs, the partnership programs, and our number one qualifier for our partners, as we choose our partners, which ones we want to onboard, which ones we want to work with, we go through a process to make sure there's an alignment in values. And it's very important for us that we partner with people that like to sell to the customers the right products at the right time on the right timelines, and that offer solutions that actually solve our customers' problems at a fair, reasonable price, all of these things. And so for us, it's super, super important to align on values, which is why you're here, right? Mercy brought you forward as a guest because of the values and your strengths there. Is there one or two? I heard you like to help. I feel like you're a protector. I feel like, is there another value or two that's kind of your guiding principle?
Again, it goes to my faith, which we won't get into here, but I just think there's an overarching principle there of I'm here to be help, to be helpful. I also think that goes into my upbringing of a single mom, three kids. Like, there was no downtime, right? There was never downtime. We were always working. We're always doing something. She was always doing something in a small town, southern Minnesota, right? It was hard to make man's meat. And so I would say I come from a long line of very hard workers. I was the first college graduate in our family, the whole family, right? So all that to say that I also feel very blessed with where I am today and the opportunities I have.
That's interesting. So it sounds like your mom was a giver in a lot of ways, being a single mom, that probably led to you being a giver. And then you get a lot back after you give, and it may take time to get those dividends. But we've asked all of our other guests, we didn't ask you this time, but like, what is their superpower? And it's been like fire and some pretty good ones, like pretty good superpowers. But I think it sounds like yours might be that giving. Sure, there's protecting it and stuff as a result, but that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah. Giving, maybe service, acts of service, things like that. It seems like, yeah, I really love that your faith, everything is kind of guiding you today. So how do you think that helps you? Like having these values and the way that you manage your teams and your organizations, how has that helped you in your career?
I think at the end of the day, I care, right? People know I care. I'm not just here for a paycheck. I'm not here for a title. I'm not here for the promotion. I'm here to do the right thing for the right reasons. Over the years, I've had team members honestly say, wherever you go, I want to go, which feels great. And of course, then I always feel bad when you can't bring them with. But at the end of the day, I care about the people that work for me, the people I work with. I want them to be good. I want them to grow in their careers. And anything I can do to help in that, I mean, that's what I foresee as my job, right? As the CISO, I've got a whole company that my job is to promote and grow. And that isn't just the bank account of the bank, right? It's also the people and their careers, including their family life and all those things. So
that's cool. Would you say it, so we even talk about that in our own internal stuff, like Tim and I, for our teams, about purpose and culture and driving. And it feels like we get a lot back, which is not the intent of doing it, but you end up getting a lot back and we grow our business as a result of doing that. Everybody gives and sort of cyclical in that way. Have you found some experiences even early at your time at Choice that in that sort of like giving back to your teams has already started getting more excitement, people are more engaged and sort of helping out the larger business that way?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. When I get approached about the position at Choice, one of the first things that drew me in is their tagline, people first, right? So it just hits the sweet spot for who I am. So I would say with my team, you know, it's been, well, what, 70 days, roughly, something like that, since I've been there. And I would say yes, right? The team feels supported. The team feels heard. The team feels led. And again, as a leader, my job isn't to come in and just start washing the walls of everything there. My job is to start asking questions and trying to understand. Of course, at the same time, I was being told by my leaders that, hey, we got to get X, Y, and Z done as well. I think you could do both. It isn't or, I think it's an and. And you do that by having kind of the one-on-one conversations and just seeking to understand the individual. And so I know there were some people on my team who initially weren't so keen on the daily standups, weren't so keen necessarily on the frequency of the one-on-ones, but I think they've come to appreciate that now because there's lots of things that I have the ability to update them on. They appreciate those updates. Again, that's information I don't think was shared with them in the past, and I'm trying to create a team. So the more I have these individuals actually sitting in the same meeting, same conversation together, and my goal there is to create that team mentality.
I love that. We often talk about good behavior being contagious, right? And if you're a leader and you said three things that really triggered me in a good way. You said your team feels seen, they feel led, they have like someone they trust. And so one of my favorite authors of all time, I quote him probably every day, is Simon Sinek. And Leaders Eat Last, he talks about the number one job, number one role of a leader is to make his team feel safe. And to feel safe, three things need to happen. You need to be seen, heard, and understood. And so you rattled off kind of very similar things. And that's literally Simon Sinek's formula. And he may have taken it from somewhere else. I don't think this is rocket science, right? But that's kind of the formula. Like to feel safe, you need to be seen, heard, and understood. And so I love that you rattled that off about kind of how you teach your team and coach your team. And it's contagious, right? And even just talking to you, it's contagious. I feel you can feel that you're a great leader and you genuinely care about your people. So absolutely love that. So you were at Edinburgh and you have a couple of different ties to Scotland. And so the first is you were there for a rugby tournament. You're a college football athlete, and now you're highly involved in rugby?
Yeah, so I was there because I took my son's old high school team on a tour to Edinburgh, and they had two matches across, well, 5 days of travel, two matches, and a little sightseeing. So took 48 people to Scotland on the tour.
Just a few? 48?
Just a few of us. Yeah, I had this gift of administration thing. So tend to be a planner and leader and stuff like that. So
did you guys go visit the castle?
We were at the castle. Yep.
Okay. So top of that, we got married and went there for our honeymoon in December. There's like 4 hours of daylight, almost nothing to do in Scotland. We were young, didn't know any better, but we went to the top where they do the war memorial.
Yep.
I walked in there. There was like 10 people in there. My wife and I'm 22 years old, and I walk in and just am mesmerized. First time I've ever seen anything like this. And like quite loudly, I'm like, this is like Lord of the Rings cool. And everybody just looks at me. It's like, oh, my bad. I kind of messed up the war memorial.
Yeah.
Great place. Hope none of them was as disrespectful as I was, but.
No, there was actually a wedding going on up there while we were there. So we couldn't stand up there, but yeah, great place, beautiful city. And then Tim, you mentioned I have another connection, right? I went to McAllister College in St. Paul, the Highland McAllister Scots, Fighting Scots. They were naming themselves the Moose or something, the Highland Cows. Like, that's terrible. I'm just going to say that for those from McAllister watching, like, terrible decision to go from the Fighting Scots to the Highland Moose. So I went to school there, got my degree in mathematics, played football, and that's where I started my love of Scottish Highland games as well.
Throwing heavy things.
Flipping and throwing heavy things.
And speaking of volunteer, we'll put a link to this, but I want to make sure we call out and link Minnesota Youth Rugby.
Yes, this please.
Sounds like you have an involvement there as well.
Yeah, I mean, my son started playing rugby in sixth grade, and that's when I got introduced. Honestly, I had invites to play in college, but they were always a little too chemically induced for my liking. And he started playing, and I started to fall in love. I started to fall in love with the social aspect that rugby, particularly at the youth level, has. The socials after, teammates who were team, people playing rugby against each other and sitting down and having a hamburger and talking and laughing. And so after he graduated and started playing college over here at Wayne State, I decided to take a role in the Minnesota Youth Rugby Board and got nominated as the board president. So I've been there almost 2 years now. So we're responsible for all T-12 rugby in the state of Minnesota and North Dakota. So it's really kind of cool. Had to put on my first state tournament last June, getting ready to start the planning for this year's state tournament here on June 7th in Eden Prairie. So really looking forward to it.
Awesome. Do you think, I mean, obviously your leadership skill set, you're sitting on the boards of these programs, obviously that resonates there. Is there a tie between your sports activity and some of the things that you learned playing sports growing up that lead to your current leadership skills?
No, I would say that particularly with the Minnesota Youth Rugby, it was a fell in love with the sport that I didn't feel was being led well, right? All the way from sixth grade, we heard about Minnesota Youth Rugby, what it was supposed to do, what it, we didn't feel as a parent it was doing. And then the opportunity came up to go to a board meeting and found out it was the annual meeting. And guess what? They were voting people in. And no one was raising their hand. And anyone who knows me will know that I'll be the first to raise my hand to help and solve the problem. And there I was, and I got nominated.
Out of the gate, first meeting. Wow. Old choice. That's awesome.
Of course, I accept the role and I dig in. And of course, there's no documentation. There's nothing to lead me, to guide me. And now I'm off trying to reinvent the wheel.
So the no documentation stuff is not just an identity problem.
It cool. is not.
So it sounds like you've led people like through the giving. It's also with the sports, with rugby and having played. It sounds like you're used to some constructive conflict to win games. Probably helps a little bit in some of your role stuff too. So you are newer and kind of segue a little bit newer into the role at Choice. You've got tenure at a lot of different places too along the time you're at those spots. When you jump into like this new role as a CISO, are there certain things that you're looking for from an identity perspective? You don't need to give us specifics about Choice, but just in general around identity.
Well, I would say in every position I've hopped into or taken, right, I started looking at the fundamentals, right? Where are we at from the foundational pieces? What are our policies and standards say we should be doing, right? Particularly from an identity perspective, but of course, in my role across all of security. And usually that is the leading indicator to where the bodies might be hidden or what might or might not be there, right? Anyone who's done this over time kind of knows that you pull out your basic backpack of tools and tips. And once you find out what's there foundationally, you kind of know where to start digging and looking, right? And so over the years, like I said, I've been able to do that. Even at larger banks, I was at TCF and they got acquired, even be able to do that there. And what you would assume is a more mature organization. And again, every business struggles with the same things.
You know, the incident when you were a college football player, you were at the right place at the right time. You just happened to be there when the crime was committed. It sounds like when you're moving into these security roles, you may have to uncover. You're not at the right place at the right time, but you do need to uncover what actually happened. Do you have any stories or examples?
Oh, geez. I know at one of my former employers, again, we're not going to name names, there was some examiners who highlighted some issues. I got there at the end of a 3-year stint where the company was working to solve those issues that were highlighted by the regulators. I took an initial peek and I'm like, this isn't good. I was told I didn't have to worry about it though. So I said, okay. And next thing you know, I'm sitting on a call that was not good. The thing I didn't have to worry about was the thing I ended up worrying about the most. I ended up having to onboard 150 applications into SailPoint in 5 months, which I don't think has ever been done. I had to also build out 300 SOD rules that didn't exist before. So imagine doing that in a high pressure, regulated environment with all the eyes on you, because now the 3-year effort was worth nothing. And now we got to start over and do something else. And we got 5 months to do it.
Oof. Okay. So you just said that on this podcast, the 5 months, 150 apps. Blink twice if you want me to delete that out of this message, because everybody's going to contact you on how you did that. Everybody wants Rich Rhodes to help them now.
My shorter answer is I had a really good team. We were able to bring in a third party to basically build the assembly line. And a lot of those apps end up being mainframe. So we had to once we built our pattern, we was able to reuse that pattern quite a bit.
Very good. Yeah, we've had to do that a lot where it's building some kind of framework to dive in, but it's still the adoption piece. Like, even with that, you got to build all the service accounts, build out the opening of ports, making those connections to all of the applications.
Well, the hardest part was just the change management internally, right? Because all those IT teams that were all of a sudden immediately impacted had plans, right, that they've been talking about for 3 months, right, to leadership. And now we're throwing a wrench in all that. But that's where ground up and then had to move our leadership to do some top down and get this prioritized because everyone was impacted.
That's actually a really good point. So that's one of our biggest struggles in identity is, like you said, everybody's got other jobs. Identity is important, but it's not as important as X for the teams. And you're often having to drive in people. So it sounds like one, like this issue was probably a help to motivate getting things done faster. But even still, like how much buy-in did you get from the top to like actually get people to focus on your needs and prioritize that? Or were you still having to work in people's schedules?
I would say it was a 3-year project and probably a double-digit million-dollar effort up until that point. I think there was a lot of those same leaders who are all of a sudden on the hook.
Okay.
That after 3 years, you didn't close our problem. So I think everyone is highly motivated.
Gotcha. So I just need to find, for my future clients, I just need to find that motivation.
It definitely helps.
Well done. I think you should be really proud of yourself for that and your team. I know they were a big part of it.
The team was great. It was harder. I wasn't even there a year, right? So all of a sudden, here's this newer leader coming in, having to blow up everyone's world to get us to a point where we can say we're done, right? To get this regulatory pressure off of us. And, but same thing, right? I was in the day of the day with my people checking in and how are you doing, right? And how can I help? And so they knew that they weren't in there alone. It wasn't just an edict from the mountain, right? That was in the with them. And I would say that something similar happened when I was at TCF Bank and we announced the chemical merger. That was August 1st legal date, if I remember right. And then so we started doing the merger of two banks, right, with an August system day one. And then COVID hit. You ever try to merge a bank during global crisis? But it was the same thing. Like, we had a lot of work to do and everybody had to do it. And all of a sudden now my teams are no longer amongst their team members. They're literally alone. And I quickly saw the mental and emotional health of my team dwindling quickly. For those that know me, I can be an idiot. I have no problem laughing at myself. My wife and I got the idea. We started buying costumes on Amazon and having them shipped. And I had a standing Monday morning meeting, 8:30 in the morning. And I would hop on with 35 people, and they were all waiting with a bated breath to see what the idiot was wearing this time. But here's the thing. I would wait to go on camera, and I would join, but I would wait. And I would just listen to them, and they were like so excited. The banter, the team banter was there despite being remote, right? And you just knew it was healthy for them. And it just showed that I cared, right? Going back to that. What I also find is funny is my wife was taking pictures of me before I joined the meeting. She was sharing it with her team at her company out of California, and they're actually international. So now I've got people around the globe wondering what the idiot is going to wear today. But I think it was great, right? Again, from that mental and emotional health perspective, I think it just gave somebody something positive, or at least not negative, to focus on.
That's awesome. Well, are we talking like T-Rex outfits? What are we talking?
The pink ballerina, the 6 foot long triceratops, the inflatable hippo. I was the abducted by aliens. I was the party pooper with the toilet seat.
That's awesome.
We need to have you back on in costume. In costume. Yeah. Love that. We've joked about superpowers, but that also, I don't want to call it your superpower, but that is definitely a strength, right? It feels like you identify gaps in needs and try to fill those needs, whether it's business or personal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I am a pretty good evaluator of the emotional state of the person in front of me.
Would you say, if you had to give a percentage of tools and features and functions to do your job or managing people, what's the balance there?
Oh, it's easy. 90% people. Easy.
Wow. That's similar to a couple of the CISOs answered a number, which is, it seems flip-flopped from many of the CISOs out there, but it's my opinion, and I think most of us believe that the very best leaders are leading with people first. So there's a lot of great CISOs out there, but the very best rely on people, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I was on a conversation earlier today, and we did the look-back machine back to the target breach, right? They had all the tools. What broke down? The people in process.
So target's another name. You mentioned everybody's a victim and no one's immune to being breached, right? So here's one, another Not the Onion article. This kind of scares me to a degree. This was 2 weeks ago. The title of the article is, "The FBI can't find missing records of its hacking tools." Okay. So I log in, I read the article, and all the information the FBI released was this. They spent $250,000 on a hacking tool. They wouldn't name what the tool was. And that's all the record they know. They spent the money, but they don't know if they used it, they don't know anything. And so all the records are missing. Like, did they buy it because of hacks? So $250,000 FBI disappeared, and they don't know what tool it was or if it worked. Kind of scary.
What kind of par for the course, right? With everything we've seen. I mean, I remember growing up and hearing that the military buys hammers for like $600 and plungers for $400. So I don't know. Chalking up to governments, I guess.
It was really good to have you on the call, man. We got to learn a lot about you. I've learned a lot. I think it also is a good reminder, because even as you're telling some of the stories, that idea of giving and supporting the teams often pays dividends. It helps people follow. It makes people excited to work, have a reason to work beyond just the paycheck. And it's so easy to forget that. I know everybody who's listening, I'm sure at some point's been guilty of forgetting that. And so I think you're one of those great examples of why it's worth making sure you've got it tattooed to your arm in front of you on the mirror, whatever your sort of personal slogan is, make sure you're remembering and keep giving. So thanks, Rich, for that reminder and for your time on this call.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us in this episode of Authenticate This, the Cybersecurity Leadership Podcast. Check out the show notes for links and resources mentioned in today's shows. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss on any future episodes.